Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Okay, one thing the game needs is more people like you.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
Mookie Betts.
Daniel Bard.
Steve Aoki.
Jared Salt Lamakia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring.
Baseball isn't boring. It's Gordo here in for Bradfo, and I'm here with Sammy, and I'm here with Pat. That's right, the PT Playtesty boys are taking over Baseball Isn't Boring for this one for a very special Who Says No edition for a guy who is unanimously, I think, among the three of us, our favorite potential trade target in baseball for any team this offseason. We're going to be talking Garrett Crochet. And what a time to do it, because the news over the last couple of days with the national media, with the local medias out in out at the GM meetings in Texas, is Garrett Crochet is very, very, very likely to be dealt. Sammy, I'm here with Sammy and Pat. Guys, like, Garrett Crochet, what do you think of this guy? Like, we're taking a full overarching league scope of this, but as a pitcher, you like the guy?
Yeah, I mean, what more could you ask for? This guy, first of all, he looks the part. 6'6", just built like a horse, throws high 90s fastball consistently, and it's an easy high 90s fastball. Very little effort to the naked eye. So he looks the part. On top of that, he's striking out more than 13 guys per nine innings. Unbelievable. He's on a contract right now where whichever team acquires him, they'd have him on a rookie deal for 2 years. And then on top of that, this is a guy who's expressed that he wants to be extended by whatever team acquires him. So, and by the way, he's only 25 years old. So I don't know what more I could say about this kid. He's unbelievable. He's, for me, as a Boston Red Sox fan, he's the number one target that I want. I know we're going to talk about an array of teams today, but man, what more could you ask for in a trade target?
Yeah, I mean, everything Sammy said, it's you're getting a young ace that is at least controllable through 2 years, a guy who has expressed even as early as last year's deadline that he wants an extension wherever he goes. High 90s fastball, legit breaking stuff, high K per nine. The innings things, you can be sure. You can be a little cautious of that. But, I mean, eye test, baseball savant test, the pure stats test, he passes everything. Mm-hmm. Guy who is a frontline starter for 90.
Already had Tommy John, too, so it's not like a guy where mm-hmm. you kind of have to carve out a year where you're thinking maybe he's going to miss some time. He's already done it. So, just like Pat said, he passes every test. So I'm all in on Garrett Crochet. And I think every team, every fan base who roots for a team that needs pitching in any way, you should also be in on Garrett Crochet.
The thing about Crochet that I think a lot of people are scared of the guy, because really he's been a frontline starter and really a starter only for a year. He's only been starting for a year, and a lot of that scares a lot of people, and I get it. But when you look at the alternatives here, especially for bigger market teams, you know, you could obviously go to free agency and sign a Max Fried. You could sign a Corbin Burns. You could sign Blake Snell for big money. But those guys are all 30, 31, 32. They're getting up there in age. And with Garrett Crochet, he's got about a fifth of the career innings as those guys have. And yeah, you could be a little bit afraid of inexperience. He's never hit 200 innings. But at the same time, it's like those guys, the free agents, they're all at the point in time where starting pitchers start to sort of slowly deteriorate. Their fastball velocity ticks down a little bit. You've seen it a little bit with Burns and his strikeout numbers. I know Max Fried's velocity looks good and Blake Snell looks as good as ever, but it can happen fast. And with a guy like Garrett Crochet, Sammy said it, he's 25 years old. You're getting him on the upswing. You're getting him, you know, you saw like kind of last year was kind of the trailer. You saw it in the first half of the season, just how good he is. And then obviously the White Sox and Crochet limited him in the second half. He never topped four innings in a start, and that was on purpose to try to keep his innings down. But despite all that, despite his limitations in terms of going deep into games, his self-imposed limitations, he still finished seventh in strikeouts in the majors. Watching him on the mound, it kind of feels like you're watching a dominant closer, but you're just watching him for like 6-7 innings. Like that's and it's kind of DeGrom-y in a way.
Yeah, a little DeGrom-y. I like that. Yeah. By the way, Gordy, you talk about the innings limit. That is because of the Tommy John surgery. So that's for me, that's not an alarm. I think it would be more alarming if the White Sox were just like, yeah, have at it. Throw 210 innings with your recently repaired elbow.
He also could have gotten tired if he did that, too. Like, and then yep. All of a sudden he's going like instead of four innings, one run, six Ks, he's going seven innings, four or five runs. And it's like, oh, this guy's not the same. Mm-hmm. But this way, you know, his arm is fresh. I think that's the biggest thing for me is you can trade for a guy who, as you guys said, wants an extension. So you can get a guy extended at in an age 25 season where, you know, his arm is not worn down because he's barely used it. Like, that's amazing. No, that does not come around every now and then.
Absolutely. And Gordo, to your point, you just mentioned those last three starts, just the last three that Crochet made, 12 innings. 18 strikeouts,
yeah.
One earned run. So this guy is so legit. I have way less fear about Crochet's future than the average baseball fan. I'm aware of that, but it's just so hard not to just be enthralled by the player here.
So let's get into it a little bit. So Chris Getz, White Sox GM, was talking a little bit about it at the GM meetings, about the similarities between this current situation with Crochet and last year's situation with Dylan Cease. The reason they're comparable, obviously, it's the same team dealing a frontline starter. But Dylan Cease had 2 years on his deal when they dealt him last offseason. Garrett Crochet, even though it feels like you've barely seen him, he has 2 years left on his deal right now. So he said it himself that you can kind of use the Cease deal as a baseline for trades. I'm going to let you guys go first. One thing I will say is that because of the extension thing, because he wants the extension, and Jeff Passan reported on this on a podcast. I believe it's the ESPN Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney. He reported on this a couple days ago saying that because teams know that Garrett Crochet wants an extension, it might drive the price up a little bit because you're not getting a guy just for 2 years, most likely, if you trade for him. So I don't know how you guys handled all that, but I will preface it by saying I think I aimed a little bit high, but let's hear it. Sammy, I want you to go first. What do you got?
All right. So I was thinking the same thing, using the Dylan Cease trade from last year as a bit of a model. Could not do it. The team I'm working with is the Arizona Diamondbacks, and I spent probably an hour mixing and matching prospects, major league talent on both sides, trying to make something make sense in the model of that Dylan Cease trade. Couldn't work. So I scrapped it, and here's what I'm going with. To the Diamondbacks, Garrett Crochet and first baseman / outfielder Andrew Vaughn. And to the White Sox, one man, and I'm sure you guys can guess who that is, shortstop Jordan Lawler. Depending on who you ask, I looked at all the prospect rankings. He's ranked anywhere between 9th in Major League Baseball and 29th. Let's look at the Arizona ads first. Obviously, Garrett Crochet, gigantic upside, like I just explained. creates a devastating 1-2 punch atop that rotation. You'd have Zach Allen and Crochet back to back. That's absurd. Then you also got Fott, E-Rod, Montgomery might come back, Merrill Kelly, just an unbelievable rotation. Diamondbacks are also likely going to lose Christian Walker, who's their all-star gold glove first baseman. He got the qualifying offer. Doubt he accepts it. Maybe he comes back, but for the sake of this trade, let's say he doesn't. They replace him with Andrew Vaughn. Pretty average bat, but when you're playing with the White Sox, I feel like I want to give all those guys a mulligan. Must be hard to show up to work when you are literally the worst team in the history of Major League Baseball. So Vaughn, still only 26 years old. The Diamondbacks would have him for 2 years. He can also play a little bit of outfield as a added bonus for him. Right-handed bat. And then Jordan Lawler, like I said, ranked anywhere from 9th to 29th on the prospect list from all the major outlets. Probably going to debut in 2025. And a good fit for the White Sox because their top hitting prospect, Colson Montgomery, who's a shortstop, he is taking reps at third base in the AFL right now. So you could foresee that left side of the infield for the White Sox in the future being Lawler, Montgomery, just a nasty duo. And yeah, that's basically the gist of the trade. To recap, Diamondbacks are getting Garrett Crochet and first baseman slash outfielder Andrew Vaughn. And the White Sox are getting a new crown jewel to their farm system, Jordan Lawler.
I think including Vaughn was very creative. I liked that. I like that inclusion there because their first base situation is a big mystery until the Christian Walker thing gets resolved. I think it's going to be tough because the White Sox are going to hold out to try to get a team's crown jewel prospect. And with my trade, it's going to be the same thing. And I don't think the White Sox say no to this. I think if the White Sox can get a crown jewel-esque prospect, these are the types of prospects that teams have not dealt, I feel like, in years. I'm trying to remember the last time we saw a legitimate top 10 to 15 prospect in baseball traded. If anyone can think of that, let me know. But like Dylan Cease last year, Drew
might
Thorpe.
Might be the Red Sox with Moncada and Kopech.
And that Moncada, was a long time ago.
Moncada was second, first or second, depending on who you ask. I don't know. That's a good, I'm going to think on that, but continue, please.
What came first? The Dansby for Shelby Miller or the sale for Yoan Moncada?
I think Dansby came first, but it might have been the same offseason.
It might be Moncada then, but, yeah.
Leave a comment.
But regardless, man, it is that we're talking before 2017 if it's that. So it's just not something teams have done. We'll see. I mean, Crochet, 2 years of control, it's tough. But I think that what the White Sox have to do is say, who are the teams we're talking about Garrett Crochet with? Is it the Diamondbacks, like the Red Sox, the Cubs, the Mets, the Phillies, the Orioles?
Baltimore,
like,
yeah.
Identify the top prospect on each of those teams and say, okay, if we can get one of those guys, we'll do it. And then if it gets a little bit later in the offseason and those guys have not hit the table, which I think there's a good shot none of them do, then you start to trickle out into a little bit more creative models, kind of like the San Diego Dylan Cease trade, where the centerpiece of that trade was Drew Thorpe, who was at the time the 85th best prospect in baseball. So I think in short, I would say Diamondbacks say no at the start, but if the market gets to that point, I could see them turning around and doing it.
Okay. I feel like that's a solid review. Pat, what do you got?
I'm actually on the flip side. I think Chicago says no.
Ooh, this is good then.
Juicy.
I think there's some questions around Lawler's major league fit. He's had some pretty good minor league numbers. Hasn't really shown much at the major level. Granted, he hasn't played much at the major league. But I think if you're Chicago and you know that the teams out there are there, like the Mets, the Red Sox, the Orioles, who knows? For all we know, the Dodgers. Like, there are teams who maybe won't give up the Lawler type, but give you that tier below and give you two. And I think for a team like Chicago, who is the most rebuilding team, maybe you do in that instance take quantity over quality, because you have Colson Montgomery, like you do have guys, Edgar Cuero's coming up. They just drafted Hagen Smith, like they have legit pieces there.
Schultz,
yep.
Oh, Schultz, nasty.
Like, you have legit pieces there. And if you could field close to a full starting nine of legit prospects, I think you do that over you know, the one guy in Jordan Lawler. But I don't hate it. I think if there is a one-for-one trade, the Lawler level is where that kind of water finds its level. But me personally, if I'm Chicago, I kind of do want quantity over quality in this instance.
And that's what they've shown in the past too, which is something that definitely should be taken into account when thinking about this, because there are different philosophies with GMs. Some of them want to get the best prospect they can get, and some of them, we're Red Sox people, and we saw this with Chaim Bloom. When Chaim Bloom would trade guys, he would go for the quantity, take as many shots as you can take to try to get it right. And you know, obviously you have a higher ceiling the more guys you acquire. So right. And that's what Chris Getz showed last year.
The Athletics do that a lot. And I know people mock the Athletics and everything, but if you look back the last 20 years, that's the smallest market team, and they've been in the playoffs a lot. So that formula, I don't like it, because I'd rather teams just, you know, spend money or go after big prospects. But if you have a cheap owner like that, and the whole White Sox are historically pretty cheap, might be the way to go. Not to, you know, give a pass to cheap owners, but sometimes you just have to. These are the cards we're dealt. You got to go for the quantity over the quality sometimes. So I hear you, Pat. That's a good point.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's hear Pat's. Pat, what team are you dealing Garrett Crochet to?
So I teed it up pretty nicely, because I kind of said what I would want. Well, I made a trade around what I would want. I'm doing the Baltimore Orioles. I think the Orioles are fit for everybody. They can trade for anybody with new ownership. They might be able to sign anybody, but I think Crochet fits their window really, really well. You have Rutschman, Young, and under control. You have Holiday. You have Henderson. You have all these young building blocks. And then you have guys like Samuel Palos, who isn't even up. Like, you have so much coming up through the pipeline. He fits their window well. So what I did was I did take that warp approach. And within the back of my mind, I did have these teams. Crochet is going to sign. Chicago knows that too. So they have leverage on this. My trade, Garrett Crochet and Justin Anderson, mid-level reliever, couple years of arbitration left, 31, to Baltimore for Heston Kjerstad, Cade Povich, and Dylan Beavers. So Kjerstad has graduated from the top 100. He's probably in that like 25 to 60-ish range, right around there. Cade Povich, much like DL Hall last year with the Corbin Burns trade, maybe a fringe top 100 guy if he was still prospect eligible. Fine at the major league level, nothing great. And then Dylan Beavers is not a top 100 guy, but he is a pretty good prospect. He is a Willy Abreu type, we'll say. Good bat, outfielder. And like I said, Chicago has holes to fill. They're not getting any time. And in this, you get ideally a back end starter, legit starting outfielder tomorrow in Bjerstad, and potential starting corner outfielder in Dylan Beaver. Orioles, on the flip side, get to pair up Grayson Rodriguez with Garrett Crochet and all those guys coming back, Tyler Wells, all those guys. And then they also add in a reliever because there's no such thing as too many good relievers.
Okay. Gordy, you want me to react first?
Yeah, go for it.
So I like it. I like the concept. How old is Heston Kjerstad? He's like 20.
20. He is 25.
25. Okay. I was going to say, if he's 26 or 27, I don't think the White Sox will consider it. But 25, I think it's close. I think maybe Baltimore would have to boost the quality of the prospects a little bit. Just a touch, though. But I think you're right on track. If the White Sox do want to go with this quantity over quality approach, it's going to be something like this. Kjerstad, I've kind of heard mixed reviews on. That's the holdup for me. I think Povich could be 3-4-5 kind of major league starter, which, you know, people will roll their eyes, but you need
perfect
that.
Perfect secondary piece to a trade.
Exactly. Good secondary piece. Every team needs a guy like that. Beavers, to be totally honest, not 100% familiar with him. He's brand new. A long shot is the gist of that one. But maybe the headlining piece would be a little bit better. And I know Baltimore has a lot of options they could look to. They could even go from the major league roster, a young guy like that. But overall, I think it's close. I think the Orioles definitely say yes to that. The White Sox, I would lean no, though.
It's interesting because when I was talking before, I said the White Sox should identify all these teams and identify each of their top prospects. And the Orioles have two guys. And I think the more realistic one to deal would be Kobe Mayo, but I don't know. If the Orioles did not want to deal one of their top two guys, Kjerstad is probably the next best thing. And I think he's better than every other team's secondary piece after their elite crop of prospects. So it's going to be another one of those things where it's like, did they get that elite prospect in a trade? Probably not. So I actually think that an offer like this might be the best that they can do for 2 years. Maybe if they have an extension locked up at the time of the trade. Like I look at Garrett Crochet and I see everything that he has to offer, and I want to say that the White Sox should be able to get multiple amazing prospects, but just based off of the trades that have been done in the past, I don't know if it's going to be there for a guy like, especially, you know, we love Crochet. We think that he's on the up and up and he's going to be great for years to come, but I'm sure there's plenty of teams that are going to argue that, hey, this guy hasn't pitched a full year, so why am I going to deal, you know, 6 years of, you know, a prospect I want to build my entire organization around for 2 years of a guy who I don't even know can make through a full season. So I think a deal with Kjerstad might end up being the best that they could do if it's on the table. The Orioles definitely should be looking to trade him. They've been dicking him around, moving him back and forth, you know, majors and minors, inconsistent opportunities. He obviously hasn't made the most of it by any stretch of the word, but yeah, he should be the guy. Kjerstad should be the guy that they're dangling, and, you know, get the best player you can for him, whether it's Crochet or someone else. You know, the other guys could become available. I don't know if any of them are as good or as desirable as Crochet, but like if the Mariners wanted to trade one of their starters, like Kjerstad has the maximum amount of control. It could be pretty enticing for them too.
Gordo, can you spell Kjerstad off the top of your head?
I'm going to go with Kjerstad.
Is there a T at the end? Is it Kjerstad?
No, it is. I have it right here.
Spell it.
Kjerstad.
You got it. Oh. Nice, nice. Yeah. I wasn't sure if there was a T at the end or not, like one of those Kjerstad. But yeah, you sorry. That was important. We had to go over that.
Yeah. It's a good trade offer, though, Pat. I like both of your guys' trade offers. And this is why I think that Crochet is going to get dealt this offseason, because there's a bunch of teams that can put together really good and realistic trade proposals to the White Sox for Crochet, especially, you know, understanding that, hey, this is a guy that wants to extend. Like, that's such a big thing here.
That's wild. I can't recall a scenario where a guy like Crochet, well, first of all, it's hard to think of any scenario where a 25-year-old quote-unquote ace caliber guy is being traded. But second, in a scenario where he's pretty openly saying, I want to be extended. It's just it's kind of a unique scenario. So I know we have that Dylan Cease trade to go off of, but it's an imperfect comparison either way. So yeah, very, very interesting for the trade fanatic people out there. Hard to say where this is going to go.
Yeah, like the key difference is obviously it's from the same team and they have the same amount of control and they're both frontline guys. But Dylan Cease was coming off a down year, but he's shown in the past that he can make it through a full season, be a number one, be a horse.
Mm-hmm.
Crochet coming off a much better season, but has not shown any of that. So it's an interesting comp. It's not exact, but you can definitely use the two. You can use the Cease trade. If it were different teams, I think I'd be a little bit more careful comparing them, but it's just the fact that the White Sox have done this in the past. I know I'm talking about comparing them, but my trade, I have two trades actually. Do you want the simple one first?
Ooh.
And then we could get complex?
Yeah, start off easy.
Yeah.
Okay, easy. So it's with the Phillies. All right, Dave Dombrowski with the Phillies has shown we were talking about the Chris Sale trade. That might be the last time a prospect of like a top 20-ish caliber was dealt. Well, that was Dave Dombrowski doing it. And on the ESPN podcast, Jeff Passan said he wouldn't be surprised if the Phillies could get involved if they included Andrew Painter. So that's what I'm going to ask you to start here. I have a deeper trade, but to start, who would say no Crochet for Painter straight up?
I think the White Sox say no to that just because Painter's coming off of a pretty serious injury. He has not pitched at the major league level, and that would be the definition of putting all your eggs in one basket. And on top of that, we've named so many teams off the top of our heads who are going to be interested in Crochet. I think the White Sox would much rather go with either a larger package or a package they're more confident that will hit, something like that. It's so super risky to just get one guy in his circumstance. And I know I just pitched just Jordan Lawler, but Lawler's not coming off of a brutal arm injury. What was Painter?
Tommy John.
Tommy John. Okay, so he got the big surgery. We haven't even seen him post Tommy John. And I know most guys nowadays come back looking fine or even sometimes better from Tommy John, but that's not always the case. So I love the idea, but I think the White Sox would be a little scared off by this.
Out of curiosity, did he pitch in the AFL this year? I'm going to pull it up as I'm asking.
Yeah, he did.
He did. Yeah, okay, let's see what he did in the AFL. He threw five starts. He had a 2.08 ERA, 13 innings, three runs allowed, and 12 strikeouts in those innings. So good stuff. But obviously, AFL is not AAA. It's not certainly not the majors. But it's tough. You're right. I mean, based off of their history, I do agree they'd probably want more than a one-for-one. But it's an interesting start. Pat, if you're the Phillies and White Sox, who says no to Painter for Crochet straight up?
I mean, I think in a bubble, Painter's, if they're looking for pitching prospects, I don't think they're going to get anything offered better than Painter. But at the same time, it's straight up one for one. I think I'm with Sammy. He's 21. He's only thrown, I think, five or six games in AA so far. So he's going to be, I would imagine, on an innings limit this year in AA, AAA the year after. That's off of Tommy John, AA, a full year of like a full season of rehab, much like Crochet did himself this year. That's a lot of waiting and that's a lot of eggs in a basket. You are banking on Painter. And if he comes back and he kind of flounders a la Sixto Sanchez,
yeah,
you're deep, deep waters that are not good.
Sixto. I
love a healthy Painter, but today's Painter, I don't think so.
I think also it's worth noting that a lot of the White Sox top prospects are pitchers. So they kind of are in a spot to be like, we have the luxury of not needing to take a shot on a pitching prospect. And pitching prospects in general, if I'm trading a big major league piece and I'm getting a pitching prospect back, that makes me so nervous. The list of guys who have flopped as top pitching prospects, let's just look at the Red Sox. Trey Ball, Henry Owens, Anderson Espinosa. We can go on and on and on. And there's other teams. There's so many examples of this. They're so much more volatile than hitting prospects. I just feel like that's a bit rich of a risk for the White Sox to be taking right now. And it's a risk they don't really need to take because they're so lush with pitching prospects. And
That's the key. It's right there. They don't need to take that risk because if you ask me in a vacuum, who has more value today, Garrett Crochet or Andrew Painter? I'd probably say Andrew Painter.
Oh, but no, I'd go Crochet. Gotta go Crochet.
I think Painter has more value, but at the same time, do I think the White Sox should be doing a one-for-one trade without any, I guess insurance might be the right way to put it. I don't know. Like, would you rather take Painter, who right now is listed at number 32 on Pipeline's top 100, but as recently as a year ago, he was number 6 overall, like the clear number 1 most exciting pitching prospect in the sport. Would you rather have that alone or, like, you know, the 75th ranked prospect in baseball and a couple other borderline top 100 pieces? It depends. It really depends. Yeah. But the White Sox have shown what they want. But that's where I'm going to get to the second trade proposal. Because another thing to take into account here is the White Sox might be going up for sale soon. And they're not unloading Andrew Benintendi. They're stuck with that. Maybe you could try to come up with scenarios where, you know, they get crazy prospect hauls and get to offload Benintendi or get less and offload Benny. It's not happening. But another guy making money, I think maybe like the only other guy on the team making real money, is Luis Robert. And this is a guy we've had in trade proposals for years. He's making $15 million this year, and then he has two team options for $20 million each of the next 2 years, which you'd have to think he's going to play well enough to pick up those options, maintain the flexibility. But that said, when teams get sold, and especially you've got a pretty cheap owner in Jerry Reinsdorf himself, but so regardless, money off the books helps. Though in the trade offer, you're going to need to take an extra step to get some money off the books, but we'll get there. And this, the Phillies receive Garrett Crochet and Luis Robert. The White Sox receive Andrew Painter, 32nd overall prospect, Justin Crawford, son of Carl Crawford, and 53rd overall prospect, Johan Rojas, who is an okay young player, 24 years old, not much of a hitter, but room to grow. They take on the final 2 years of Nick Castellanos. He's making $20 million. I only have the White Sox taking on 15 of the 20 mil, so the money's even. They're going to have to find a way to offload Castellanos later. That's the trade right there. Crochet and Robert for Painter, Justin Crawford, Johan Rojas, and Nick Castellanos. So three of these guys are big league ready already, including Castellanos. And then Crawford maybe a year-ish away. They're kind of killing two birds with one stone here. They're not really going to have much else to deal beyond this. But if you package those two guys, I think that's a more realistic way to get a top prospect like Painter and get the other pieces that you can get to make yourself feel good about a deal, knowing that, like, hey, if Painter flops, you know, Justin Crawford is maybe the fastest prospect in baseball right now. Like, he could carry the deal too.
This is tough. Good job, Gordo. I'm thoroughly torn. Luis Robert, super interesting. We talk about him a lot. 2023, this is a 5-win player with a 130 OPS plus, 857 OPS, 38 home runs, stole 20 bases, and he's playing great defense. The following year, 2024, not sure what happened, injuries, spoiler, OPS goes down to 87. That's a 43-point drop, brutal OPS, 657. That is a 200-point drop. The power got cut in half, more than that, more than cut in half. Stolen bases are up, so that's good. But Luis Robert fell off a cliff in 2024. Bizarre, too, because he's only, what? He just turned 27 a few months ago. So tough guy to analyze, but if the Phillies are confident he bounces back, I'm sure they'd be interested in acquiring him. I think there's a lot of teams that are confident in Luis Robert bouncing back. The package going to the White Sox, Painter, very valuable. We're a little bit in disagreement on how valuable, but valuable. Crawford, great. Rojas, so-so.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Castellanos, how much is he making and how much are you saying the Phillies are going to pay down?
So he's making $20 million. I'm going to have the Phillies pay $5 million each of the final 2 years on that deal. So it's 20 and 20, but the White Sox would only pay 15 and 15.
Okay. So then he kind of becomes a trade chip for the White Sox at a certain point. Probably a guy that you move at the deadline to a team that thinks they're a bat away from contending, assuming he continues to produce. He took a step back last year in his age 32 season as well, Castellanos. Mm-hmm. So
Really a positive asset there, to be honest with you. No. If I didn't have Castellanos going back in this deal, it would have been a say no for the Phillies to me. Like, getting off of that money, which is something like they're talking about, oh, Castellanos might be available. Oh, Marsh might be available. So, yeah, like getting off that money, getting a little bit, I know he's a little bit swing and miss happy, getting off that, you know, able to have Schwarber at the DH spot full time. You get to improve your defense, especially with Robert coming in. But before we get Pat's take on this, the one other point I wanted to make, I keep hearing things about White Sox don't necessarily want to trade Luis Robert right now because, as you said, Sam, you're coming off a down year. But here's one issue. If Luis Robert this year comes out and has a bad year, his next 2 years are option years at 20 mil. If he stinks this year, guess what? You've completely missed your window to trade Luis Robert. Like, if at the deadline, even, like, he'll be treated like a rental unless he's performing like a player who should be paid $20 million. So, like, it's a little bit risky to hold on to him.
Yeah. Okay. So, in conclusion, I would say I think the White Sox take this. I don't know if the Phillies do it. That's so much. That's a ton. I'll say White Sox say yes, Phillies say no. But that's not a supremely confident one on either way. There's so many moving parts in this. I, again, Gordo, applaud you for thoroughly confusing me with this one. I like it.
What do you got, Pat?
I'm the opposite. I think the White Sox say no, the Phillies say yes. And the reason that I say that is, outside of Luis Robert and outside of Garrett Crochet, there is not one meaningful piece on that roster that you can then trade toward a rebuild. Those are your two cash cows right now. Personally, I think you're better off trading them separately. But let's say they do the package, right? So you get Painter, you get Crawford, you get two top 100 guys, you get Rojas, who's a fine young major league player, and you get Castellanos, and essentially a salary dump. I think Crawford is an interesting piece. I'm not super, super sold on Crawford, but he definitely has crazy upside. Painter here, again, is what scares me. Because if you are packaging your two biggest trade pieces for the big piece coming back to be iffy, that's risky. In my eyes, that's risky. If I'm trading them, I am getting a bona fide, no injury history, studded every level. I'm going guns blazing, getting the guy rather than Painter, who knows what he looks like when he comes back. Another top, 50, 60 prospect. Like, I think there's a lot of question marks in what could ultimately be the final trade toward their rebuild.
All right. I have a question for you following that, Pat. Do you have an example of a prospect that comes to mind when you think of a guy who could headline a trade like this? Can be from any team. Like, are you talking like Roman Anthony, number one prospect in baseball type? Or are you talking about someone outside?
Lawler.
Lawler's a good example.
It's like anywhere from 9 to 29, like I said.
Yeah, Lawler would make sense. I don't think...
What about Jackson Holliday? What do we think of him now?
What I thought of was Baltimore. I think Holliday, Mayo. I think Mayo would be a legit piece there. And honestly, maybe even someone like Bisalos.
Yeah.
See, those are guys with question marks. None. Aside from Holliday. Holliday hasn't shown much major leagues. I get that. The power that Kobe Mayo has is insane. That is a 40 home run. Like, that is a four hitter his entire career kind of guy. And the crazy thing is, the Orioles don't even need Bisalo. Like, Bisalo's another guy, a little bit younger, who I think could also maybe center a trade like that.
Yeah, no, he absolutely, that's another one that comes to mind when, if you want to talk Crochet and Robert, and like in that case, the Orioles could send Cedric Mullins back and the White Sox could later flip him. But this is, again, why I think it's so obvious that Crochet is going to get dealt, not to mention the White Sox obviously aren't going to compete in the next 2 years, so it makes perfect sense for them to deal him. But there are so many teams where it makes sense to acquire Crochet, both for the next 2 years and beyond with that extension. potential for the extension. And then you got these teams that have all these prospects, and you know, there are probably 2, 3, 4 teams that we didn't even talk about today that have great chances of acquiring him. Two of the ones that Buster only said that he's watching, we didn't submit proposals for, were the Red Sox and the Mets. And I know for a fact that on Play Tessie coming up soon at some point this offseason, we're definitely going to have a Garrett Crochet Who Says No Red Sox specific episode over there. So if you're not subscribed to Play Tessie, make sure to do that. But signing off on Baseball Isn't Boring, make sure to comment, rate, subscribe wherever you get your podcast for Baseball Isn't Boring as well. It's been an absolute pleasure filling in for Bradfo here. We will certainly be back again this offseason. For Sammy and for Pat, appreciate Evan producing in the back. It's Gordo here for Baseball Isn't Boring. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.